Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
If I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Man. We're on the board. S&P futures. We get these, Manny. I'm trying to find Cubs salary so I can argue with you. Dow futures up 166. Nasdaq futures up 16. Nasdaq up 17. S&P up 16. We're making another run at kind of a record here. Yesterday we were up strong during the show, and then we kind of leaked, and finally we ended up damn near down on the day. And some stocks that were up were had given it all up. So, anyway, we'll see how that plays out today. We're making another run. We still, it still looks like we want to go up a little bit, but it's getting a little heavy. So you and I have been fighting about the Cubs and baseball, huh? And it's been.
I don't think we have been fighting. I think you were on one side the other day, and then you changed to a different side. And all I've been saying is there's nuance on both sides, and I get where both sides are coming from.
Well,
I just wish it would have been handled a little differently.
I think the in my opinion, as usual, I always think that things have. I mean, a lot of the discussions we have on the show, really about virtually every subject, come down to the same thing. Either you got to make a short term decision based on like a long list of screw ups along the way, and a lot of structural things that just aren't right. In most people's opinion, I mean, when you look at the major league rosters and you look at the money that people are getting paid, you see an incredible split between. I mean, if you look at these things, you'll say, "Wait a minute, there's a guy here making $30 million or 25 or 20, and he's hitting 260, and this other guy is hitting like 295 or something, and he looks like he's better and he's 2 years younger. Oh no, he doesn't get to decide." He isn't a free agent yet. He isn't this yet. The club controls him. And this guy's a rookie. He's got 5 more years before he can ever get any kind of it. So, how did this get this way? I mean,
they have a pretty strong union, and they're complicit in exactly how it is. So,
well, it's a combination of the owners wanting to be in charge, being dumb along the way, and then the union. Doing their thing, which doesn't really help most of the people in baseball. I mean, it doesn't really help the minor leaguers. It doesn't really help, your marginal ball players to a huge extent, although the minimums and stuff are kind of getting there. But it's still not what anybody would say is remotely fair to anybody. I don't think. Do you?
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to say anything is fair or unfair when these guys are making more money than I'll ever make in my life. So, to me, it's more than fair.
All right, wait a minute. Before you do that, do me one favor. Expand your view of Major League Baseball to every kid who's coming out of high school or college or minor leagues or Dominican Republic, every kid who has the potential to play. I mean, just for a moment here, consider that your universe and not just the three bumps last week.
Right.
Do you think it's fair?
Well, like I said, what does that even mean? Do I think it's fair? Do I think what's fair?
Well,
the fact that they get to make millions of dollars in life-changing money to play a game? I mean, no, it's not fair.
Okay, all right, when you say they, first
like
of all,
you said, to put myself in their shoes.
But,
yes.
Yeah, but you're not putting yourself in the shoes of the minor leaguer who's playing center field instead of for Stacks and Jacks. You're playing for a team that has 15 center fielders, and you know five teams where you could be a starter next year, and you can't go there.
Right. I mean, you have a choice to make. If you don't like the American Major League Baseball system, you can go play in Japan. You can go play in Korea. You can play in the Venezuelan leagues.
That's very recent.
You can play in independent leagues here.
Not even you would go to Venezuela.
I wouldn't go to any of those places. I would say, well,
I can argue with Japan.
This is the level I want to play at, and this is where I can make the most money. So this is their system. Now, once I got in there and I had some power and maybe I became a player union rep, then maybe I would start fighting for certain things that these guys obviously don't give a shit about.
Well, there's a million every time either one of us comes up with an argument on the subject. There's, of course, something. How much do the players that control the union reps, how much are they willing to give up the minor league players and other people?
I mean, exactly.
I mean, we've seen it happen in the auto industry. We've seen it happen in a lot of places, and I don't know how that. I mean, it's probably a discussion on Thursday for a little bit. I mean, how did it come to terms when I was a Ute? Anybody on the there were some seniority things in auto workers and steel workers, but by and large, when I went on the truck docks, I made as much as the guy who was there 25 years. Because guess what, I was doing the same job, right? I mean, the idea that, oh, no, you're young. You, because of some contract, you're making $4 an hour and the other guys are making 12. But, oh, by the way, I'm unloading the same truck. That it may have been in a couple of unions. And I don't know the history of that. That's more of a Lou question. But sure wasn't any union I knew. You know, I mean, this idea that the Cubs could mess with Bryant for a year, essentially. And that, what was that worth? It's going to end up worth... what, $15 million to the guy?
Yeah, probably.
Now, that shouldn't be that easy to do, where you can just screw with a guy and say, whatever your ability to change from one to the other, assuming that you keep something stupid like the draft, your ability to change should start the day you start in Major League Baseball. And the idea that a 10-year minor leaguer can't change teams... But, oh, by the way, if you're a five-year major leaguer, you can. What difference does that make? You're under the same contract, aren't you?
Right.
And why does whether how long you stay in the minor leagues, you could be a 15-year ball player before you get a chance to find another place, right?
It's possible, although you'd probably either quit or they would trade you before then to clear up a spot. But, yeah, it's possible, I guess.
I mean, I
there's definitely guys that are, you know, 7, 8, 9 year minor leaguers before they sniff the big leagues.
But the implication here is who knows what the implication was when the Congress gave these guys the antitrust. But you don't want to end up like the NBA, where essentially the players are the general managers, you know, to a certain extent, which is insane. But you also don't want to be in a
situation. That's kind of what you're arguing for, though. So you're arguing for that for baseball, but not for basketball?
No, here's what I'm saying.
The players get to kind of choose their own destiny, which is what they wanted, which is great for them, but you don't like that. But for baseball, you want that.
No, what I'm saying is the idea of somewhere in the middle, you as a young ball player, you should be able to go to the place where you feel you have the best chance of going forward. I mean, any other person coming out of college...
That's what the basketball players are trying to do.
No, the basketball players are high-end people trying to make a team that they feel like playing on with their buddies. That's different.
Right, but they've negotiated now where basically your rookie contract is only, I think, 4 years, and then you can go wherever you want. And they're all deciding where they want to go and where they want to play, and they're not letting the teams control them as long as baseball does.
Okay. I mean, But again, why the 4 years?
Well, they had to compromise somewhere.
Why should it be any year?
You get drafted, and the team controls you for a certain period of time.
Why?
Well, that's how they've determined to make the league competitive.
But it's not working.
It is working. The Milwaukee Bucks just won the title. No one would have ever saw that coming.
50 years.
They're not the Lakers. Yeah. Well, there's 30 teams. So
the only reason why they did it is because a couple of guys in the Lakers are hurt.
Well, that's probably true, but the real reason why they did is because they drafted a team really strong, and they convinced their star player to actually re-sign and stay with them, and then added some pieces around him. And that's rare because usually the star player leaves for L.A. or New York.
I'm saying, Matt, is once you start not having a competitive normal system, you end up with this amazingly contrived one group's in power for a while, then the other group's. Why not just be like everything else and let it be competitive? Have to let a draft, and after 2 years in the minor league, somebody gets you get to change teams.
So you're saying 2 years is okay, but 4 years is not okay.
Well, and I don't know. I would rather be none.
So then out of high school and or college, everyone's a free agent, and then the New York and L.A., the teams with the most money, can sign whoever they want, and then everyone else gets the leftovers.
Well,
that's what you want?
No. So you do it in every other business.
I know. I'm saying that's what you want in your sports league?
I want to find a combination. I mean, if I had every single answer here, I'd be paying. We'd made a lot
of
money.
Well, I think they have found a combination. And
there's
a draft. I actually don't think it sucks. I think there's a draft. The unions and the owners kind of determine how long the team owns you after they draft you. So in the NBA, it's 4 years. In baseball, it's, 6 years?
But I mean, you don't get to.
And then from there, you can decide where you want to go.
Okay, and you'd go with the.
So maybe it should be 3 years. I don't know what the number is, but.
But I'm saying you're willing to go with four wolves and one hen on a board voting what they have for dinner.
I don't know what that means, but no, what I'm saying is that to make a league competitive, so you have small markets, you have cold weather places, you have less attractive places. You know, people would rather play in, Los Angeles than they would Green Bay, Wisconsin. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt there. Or they'd rather play in Miami than play in Detroit. That's just the way the world is, right? But they want fans in Detroit, and they want that ownership group, and they want that franchise to have a chance at succeeding. So they say, I tell you what, we'll do a draft, and it's based on your year's performance before. So if you're bad, you're going to have a higher pick. If you're good, you're going to have a lower pick. And you're going to be able to draft the best players coming out of the league first, and then you're going to be able to keep them for a period of time. In basketball, I think it's 4 years. In baseball, it's six. I don't know what it is in the NFL. It might be four. And then from there, the players can go wherever they want. And that's it. And that's what to me, that doesn't suck. I mean, it seems pretty reasonable. Now, you could agree or disagree on what that initial term should be. Maybe it should be three. Maybe it should be five. I don't know.
Well, how do you contrast that with a guy like Pete Najarian, who is not a number one or second pick? I mean, Pete and I used to talk about this all the time. He said, if you were a marginal player, which most people are, by the way, they're not all stars, he says, you are way better off not being drafted than being drafted in the sixth or seventh round.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Okay. Now that's an individual person in this country that we used to care about. I mean, yeah, I suppose. But even those guys, what's his name, didn't play for Indianapolis. Was it was the guy who was the Denver quarterback?
John Elway?
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying once you start dragging freedom out and giving power to owners, or the other way around, if your union gets so compromised that they run the damn place, once you do that, you either could be on the side that is on the benefit of it or not. And I'm saying every time that happens, there's people that get left out, and you know there's always a reason to not have a competitive system. I mean, let's put it this way: competition. I mean, ever since I've been around, competition is the greatest thing in the world for every industry but mine. Because in my industry, it's cutthroat competition. These guys are charging too little. Their way, I can't get paid that much if I charge the same amount. Well, really? That's what it's all about, isn't it? I mean, right?
Yeah, it is. But for... I think sports leagues are different than, you know, a guy getting a job at insurance.
Because you've been inundated with that since day one.
Not because I've been inundated, because I like it. Because millions of people like it, and it's for the average fan, it's a release and something outside of your sort of boring day to day to get excited about, to watch on TV, to go to a game occasionally. Some people have season tickets. Occasionally your team is good, and it kind of transforms a city for a playoff run, and the bars and restaurants benefit, and there's a parade, and there's different things like that. And it's just, it's different than the guy that's an accountant that no one cares about. So for that, they found this way to spread it across the country, a big country that has different size cities, different climates, different economic structures, whatever, and to make it as competitive as they could, this is the system they came up with. Is it perfect? No. Is it constantly evolving and tweaking? Yes. It's different. You know, wasn't that long ago, there wasn't free agency at all. The teams just owned you your whole career, and that a guy got drafted and he played for one team for 15 years and he had no choices. Now they've really compromised to the point where
think
about it 50 years ago, Chief.
Out of all
you got drafted and you played in Cincinnati for 15 years and that was it.
All right, so it took 50 years for 1% of the people that have ever signed or were ever signed in the last 50 years to be able to go where they want to go.
Well, I don't think it's 1% because if a team releases you at any time, you can go wherever you want. So it's higher than that, but if you're saying that very few guys, you know, play long enough and are good enough to make it to the free agent round, you'd be correct. I don't know what the percentage is.
I'm going
to
say,
but my point is it's evolving. You got two sides pulling in different directions, and you settle somewhere in the middle.
You got 30 teams using 30 rounds a year. Now, I could be an ass. I'm trying not to be. Now, a lot of those people go back in the draft because they go to college, right? So it's not, you don't really end up with 30 ball players a year. How many do you think you end up with? You probably end up with 20. 10 guys.
I actually don't know.
I'm going to say 10 of them end up in college. Is there anybody in college that doesn't get drafted in some lower round? That's good enough to play at a good school?
Yeah, good question.
I'm going to say somewhere between 20 and 22 you end up with.
That sounds right.
It's not the full, is it 30 rounds?
I think there are 30 in baseball.
Yeah, so what's, how many teams are there? 30? 32?
30 teams in MLB.
Right, so it's 900 guys. It's a lot of people every year. So cut it down to 20, 600 people. How many people are in free agency this year? 12?
Well, actually, the MLB draft is down to 20 rounds now.
All right.
So they used to be more than that. I think they used to be 30, but they're 20 rounds now.
Okay. And then
So now call it what? Maybe 17 players?
If we're going to be trying to be accurate this morning, if you lose a guy to college, you totally lose that draft I know you lose the guy, but do you lose the spot or do you get an extra one next year?
I think you get an extra one next year.
So you end up essentially with 20 people.
Yeah.
All right. And you're going to college, then you got to stay there 3 years, right?
If you decide to go to college, you have to go there for 3 years. Before you're eligible to get drafted again, or 3 years out of high school. I mean, you could quit college and then be drafted 3 years later, but yeah.
Okay, well, I guess where I'm trying to educate here, Matty, not just you, but myself and the listeners, is whenever you have a contrivance of any kind, you shift the power base. And you always keep shifting it, and the people at their point at the table end up being in the power base. I mean, we talked, how many days have we talked since you've been on about big bankruptcies and how you have to find yourself a seat at that table. All right. And so that if XYZ goes out and you and I are long cash at the time, we need to run out and we need to buy the bonds that everybody thinks are going to be useless. We're going to buy those at 10 cents on the buck. So we're going to spend a bunch of money and buy all these bonds that by anybody's thought is worthless. Okay. So the bankruptcy judge has no intention of actually doing this himself, right? I mean, he's going to be the judge himself. I'm not saying he's going to recuse himself. But now he's going to form some kind of a committee. You and I, with our bonds, we're going to find our fannies on that committee. Now, I guarantee you that out of the committee, now that we're part of the room, in order to satisfy us versus the people that aren't in the room, we're going to end up with, the people with the bonds are going to end up with 25% or 20% of the new stock, which, by the way, after we take care of all the debts and stuff, the company is going to have like a 99% chance of doing well afterwards since they don't have any debt and everybody else in their industry does. They're going to come piling out of there. Now we the bond owners, not you and me personally, are going to be 20% of whatever the new entity is. All right, so here we have Major League Baseball. The Congress says, oh, no, this is a national pastime. It's a total monopoly. All right, so not only do you and I, in a place like Oklahoma City, we don't get to have a team, okay? Or if we do, we got to pay all these other bleeps. What did they deserve to where if you and I want to become, we have a team in Oklahoma City, that all of a sudden we need to pay every one of these guys like what, $10 million like individually or something to buy our way into what? We don't have to buy our way into the accounting world. We don't have to buy our way into the securities business. You just form one, right? And if we think there's a market, we hang in there. If not, we don't. I mean, so you're starting from day one. So for 50 years, you're right. The only seat at the table was the owners, and it looked the way it was. All right? You never even got numbers out of these guys. It was a joke. But before the money was there, because for TV and all the other stuff, I guess people thought it was okay. I don't know if it was okay or not, you know. I mean, and then, of course, you have this players' union. They fight for years, and they end up being in there. Well, now they do some tremendous things out of the gate. They get some of this power back from the owners. And then all of a sudden, you've got the people that are representing the union going, the owners say, well, tell you what, how about if we give you guys this stuff and we'll give the young guys, like, less? So free agency really isn't free agency at any level. It's free agency for the guys in the room. And Marvin Miller was correct. And by having the arbitration, he did bring the rest of the people along to some degree, but only after 4 or 5 years. When he become arbitration eligible, is it 5, 4?
I think it's 4.
And so then, okay, now you've got that issue, but anybody, any economist, anybody, if there's life on the fourth moon of Venus, Venus doesn't have a moon. They're going to look at the Cubs' salaries, and they're going to say, wait a minute, how's one guy who's not even very, very good making $23 million and all these other guys that are playing ahead of him making $570 million? That's not something you would hang in Matty Weber Inc. You would never hang that list of salaries in your coffee room and expect people to look at it and say, that's fair. I mean, the best line ever about salaries was, there was a guy that, I forget his name, but he used to run Avis way back when Matty was very little. Remember the we Try Harder, We're Number Two? Remember that?
I do, actually.
Well, he was the chairman, the CEO of Avis. And 1 year, the shareholders said, you know, they sold out to somebody or other. And he wrote a book about up the organization, how once they got control from someone else, all he did was tear apart everything. But one of the best lines I remember from the book was, you should not get in the habit of putting your salary list in the people's names in the lady in men's room. He said, but you should never be embarrassed to do so. I mean, it shouldn't be because, who's this guy? How's he making $1 million? We don't even see him. What does he do? And some other guy who's doing all the work making $50. Because you should never be embarrassed to. I'll tell you what, Major League Baseball ought to be embarrassed if you look at those things. I mean, to anybody else, that's all I'm saying. I agree with you on everything you say in terms of that particular situation. But what I'm saying, in my mind, the whole thing is screwed up. So it's hard to say this one's fair or that one's fair when the whole thing, you're coming out of a bad smelling house. So no matter how much you shower, you're still going to smell, is what I'm saying. How's that for an analogy? SP Futures up 15, NASDAQ Futures up 16. Be back, Mr. Joel, on Canada.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. He's Mr. Weber. S&P futures up 15. The NASDAQ futures up 15 and a quarter. By the way, Maddie, my eyeball edition, which I guess I'm still all right at, even though I don't add all that much anymore. I got the Cubs at about 80 million right now, 36 of which is Haywood and Hendricks. So the other 23 guys are what? Not even two thirds.
So you're talking about with the guys they have left.
Yeah.
Yeah, their total payroll this year is 15th now. It's down to 140 million total.
I got 80.
But they're
playing for Rizzo.
But they've already paid for four months of the 6 months. That's why.
Plus they're going to pay Rizzo at the end of the year, evidently.
Yeah, so their actual number is down to 140, when at the beginning of the year I think it was, upwards of 185, 190.
I'm just saying the 80 with 23 going to a guy who's not very good does not equal a 100-hour upper deck seat.
No, it doesn't. And Hayward's the one guy they would have loved to have traded, but he has a no-trade clause and has no value.
His contract terms is 8-year, $184 million. When is that over?
Maybe next year is the last year?
You know what's interesting is David Bodie's got a 5-year, $15 million contract.
He just signed before last season, a team-friendly extension.
Yeah, Jack Davies 1 year at 8.6. Wilson Contreras is 1 year, 6.6.
Arbitration. Yeah. Same with Hap. He's getting 4, and that's arbitration.
Hap's 4. And
he sucks.
After Hap, you drop right down to 1.5 million. Austin Romain, who the hell is he? Oh, he's that catcher.
Yeah.
No, but Toronto's is a million. Jose Lobaton, a million. Who's he? Anyway. we'll forget that for a moment. Dow up 168. Individual stocks in the Dow. We've got Caterpillar up a buck. American Express up a buck 19. We've got Goldman Sachs up 230. The only one down is Microsoft, finally, and it's down a whole nickel, but they've been up every single day. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 23.1%. FTSE up 22.3%. CAC around up 65. That's a full percent. So the CAC around has actually been leading the pack over there lately. I don't know why that is. Big on the French market, but Nikkei down 139.5%, Shanghai down 16.5%. These guys, China was up almost 2% yesterday, so they're down maybe a quarter of that. Hang Seng down 40, that's 0.2%. Hang Seng was down 5% last week, came back 1 yesterday, and then they're down a little bit today, so they're still down from the last week and a half. U.S. yesterday, Dow was down 97, S&P down 8, NASDAQ, however, was up 8. Finance, we've got same spot, 1.19. We've got the Bund. Well, they're actually up two basis points. Maybe am I ever going to forget that bonds used to trade in 30 seconds? I'm thinking not. Bund, minus 0.47. Japan, wow. They're positive, but positive 0.005. Talk about hanging by a thread. Oil, up 33 cents, 71.59. So the big sell-off down into the 67, 68 range is all forgotten at this point. Brent up 37 cents, 73.26. Natural gas up a penny, 3.95, but under $4. Arbob up 2 cents at 2.29. We've got gold is down 9 bucks, 18.12. Silver down 7 cents, 25.50. Copper down 2 cents, 4.41. And we've got our crypto Bitcoin down 9.19 at 38,440. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start here on the Edens and Kennedy. Eisenhower looking okay. Traffic building on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are all good. Out west, we have a crash Ogden Avenue at Willow Springs Road. And then west of there in Carroll Stream, there's a crash at County Farm Road and Lies. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some clouds early, but then mostly sunny and mild, a high of 78. Right now it is overcast and 66 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 111 today. Right now it's clear and 90. In sports, Cubs and Sox were both off last night. White Sox welcomed the Royals into town. That's a 7 o'clock first pitch, 7:10 to be exact. Cubs are at Colorado to take on the Rockies at 7:40 Central Time. Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 11-8 in 10 innings. The Bulls made a splash in NBA's first day of free agency. They received Lonzo Ball in a sign-and-trade deal, sending Satoransky, Temple, and a second-round pick over to the Pelicans. And in exchange for Lonzo Ball, who is now signed with the Bulls for 4 years, $85 million. They also added combo guard Alex Caruso, who was with the Lakers and is considered one of the better defensive guards out there right now, to a 4-year, $37 million deal. Lastly, we'll take a quick look at the Olympic medal count, Chief. China and U.S. are tied for first place in total overall medals at 68, but China has 10 more golds than the U.S. at 32 golds.
What are they winning them in?
I don't know. I'd have to look. But China, 32 golds. The U.S., just 22. But both countries tied atop the lead with 68 total medals. Russia would be, or the ROC, Russian Olympic Committee, would be third place in total medals with 51.
I confess to watching an entire volleyball match not knowing who ROC was. I thought it was Republic of Croatia. It's the only thing I come up with. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
Doing all right. We're digesting. You didn't have much of a team with the Tigers, and we just took one of ours apart. But I was looking at Ricketts' note, and I didn't see anything about returning 20% of the season ticket money or anything like that. And I just, you know, just saying.
Boy, they really fell out of it. Weren't they leading at one point?
They were leading
about 6 weeks ago. They were in first place, and then they lost 11 games in a row and just completely collapsed. And now they're, you know, way out of there, like 12 and a half back.
Wow.
Well, the Brewers played better, and the management gave them no chance to come back whatsoever. And it is, you know, sort of interesting. I don't think they would have, but it's not like the Brewers are the 27 Yankees either. But actually, the Brewers have probably as good a starting pitching as anybody, don't they, Manny?
Very good pitching.
The bullpen got better, or is it still kind of funky?
Bullpen's okay, but their starters are electric.
Yeah. Where'd they get those guys? Did they all draft them?
I think they're all drafted.
So, well,
just two out of the three are.
So who's going to come back first, Joel? The Michigan, the Pistons, or the Tigers?
Well, Michigan basketball.
Yeah,
right
there you
here.
Go. Yeah,
they need to come back. You know, I've been pretty dire on the Michigan football outlook this year. But I will say we may have a three-headed monster at running back.
Really?
And that's something that we haven't had. Mike Hart returned from Indiana, leading all-time rusher at Michigan, has been on the coaching carousel. Harbaugh bought him in as a running backs coach. And we have two guys from last year, Hassan Haskins, averaged about 5-6 yards a carry, and Blake Corum. And then we brought in a fabulous freshman right here from my hometown, West Bloomfield, Michigan, Donovan Edwards. The question is do they have anybody blocking for him? So, you know, you need that running game, you know, to isolate the linebackers and the quarterbacks. At least make them think that you got a good running game. And then that does a lot for your tight end dragging over the middle and, the quick outs and then the long ball. Of course, we need a quarterback, but I just was thinking about that. I was discussing it with a local source, and So that, Pistons, Cade Cunningham, I liked him when I saw him. Just, you know, the NBA, also Major League Baseball. I mean, I don't know. These sports are, they're still there. I still follow them, but, don't have the same appeal. But, real quickly, we started late today. I heard you mention Microsoft.
Yeah.
And Microsoft doesn't go up every day, okay? It goes up most days. But if you have any of your listeners or your viewers keep, following Microsoft or investing in it, tell them to keep an eye on 290. They've had, five highs in a row at that area. Even on earnings, it traded to it in the pre-market. But man, if you're looking for 300 in, Microsoft, you gotta get through 290 first. And, just overall, you know, just the reaction to earnings from these big tech. I mean, Google's had a nice blast, but a lot of these stocks have been kept in check after big earnings reports. So August is not typically a great month for the market. We better, you know, get a move off that unemployment number, or on Friday. But, just looking a little top heavy here, not calling the major top, but you gotta call a spade in this market.
Joel, next week, we just brought up a subject that we could be talking on for 15 minutes, which we don't have. Question is Microsoft's value in terms of its PE and its sales, you know, per whatever, all that kind of stuff, sales for stock price, are they likely to go to the same numbers that you see in, Zoom or, who are the guys, Squared or any of those kinds of places, or are we reaching a point where the Squareds of the world, instead of giving people script, their stock are going to go flying the other way? I mean, right now there's dramatic differences in how these stocks are being priced. I mean, Microsoft is dirt cheap if you look at it like those other guys.
Yeah.
Yet it seems pretty high to you and me, you know. So
it's we could talk for an hour about that, Chief. But real quick, I just wanted to mention, and you mentioned at the end of the show, we're not doing that trading event until August 21st. So if you want more information on that, go to premarketprep.com. I'm going to give Maddie some information. It's called Introduction to Professional Trading, but it's really Introduction to Professional Investing, and just, you know, looking at these markets from a 24-hour perspective. So I just wanted to give a plug on that, and I appreciate you guys having me on, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll talk sports, and we'll talk valuations in the market. I'll do some homework.
Have a good one. I'm sure there's cup tickets for sale if you want them. S&P Futures up 60, NASDAQ up 25. Be right back. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now. Money, honey. Money, honey. Money, honey. If you want to get along with.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollies. Mr. Miller, we're on the board. S&P Futures up 16. NASDAQ Futures up 25. Do we have Mr. Kenny?
We do.
So, Kenny, I'm hearing this rumor. I can't mention that the stock of Pulcheri's Pizza has risen to such dramatic levels that you're going to use the stock to buy McDonald's this week.
If that were only the case.
It's happening to other people, it seems.
Yeah, I know. It seems to be happening to everybody except you and me.
I know, but this happened a lot in '99 too, didn't it? I seem to recall. not casting any aspersions. I'm just mentioning a historical fact. Lobbing one out there. How does a company that looks to me by their balance sheet worth $4 billion pay $29 billion for another place without even coming up with any cash? Only in America.
Only in America, it's the magic of math, I guess, right?
I'd be buying everything if that was me. If PTI Securities stock was traded like $1,000 a day and it was valued at like $50 billion, I'm sitting there going, $50 billion, us? I think we better send this. Like, this is like Scrit, for God's sake.
What's going on?
Nothing. I say your buddy Mark Cuban, he benefited from that, right?
He did benefit from that, I believe. I don't know the details. I have to go back and read the whole story.
It was Yahoo, wasn't it?
It was...
AOL.
AOL.
It was AOL, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what Maddie was just saying.
Yeah, it was AOL.
Yeah, he was... You know, when it happened to him, really, when you think about it, right, it was... I think it was back then, right? Was it 99? It was before 2000, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. I bet Maddie Weber will find out for us.
Yeah.
Kenny, in one of those deals, you know more about this than me, the big guys up top, if you're the chairman of the place that's being bought, you generally have a time you have to hold the stock. You have a strip restriction agreement, right?
Yeah. I mean, for most deals, yes. You have a time, yeah, sure. You're like an insider, right? You got to hold it.
But how far down the pecking order does that go? I mean, the other shareholder was getting two shares for one or whatever. They never have any restrictions, right?
Yeah, they don't have a restriction. No. It's only, I think it's really at the C-suite level, right, where they really enforce those restrictions or create those restrictions. But, you know, if you're just a shareholder in one company and that happens, you're free to do whatever you want.
Do you think there's a, like, if you're the president and you own, you know, 50,000 shares of the company, but then as a part of the agreement, you get another 50,000 from being sitting in the chair at the right time. I wonder if you have restriction on both. I bet you don't on the part you already had.
That's an easy question. I don't know. You probably, on what you already own going into the deal, maybe not.
Yeah.
You certainly would on the award.
Right, and the awarded part you definitely would, because the last thing they want is the guy getting the chairs on Tuesday and puking them out on Wednesday.
And then blowing out on Thursday.
Well, weren't they all over your buddy William Shatner when he did that for Priceline early on?
I think so. God, that's another whole... You're taking me back to, you know, an earlier time. I didn't realize we were going to go there because I have to think about that.
Well, you know, the thing of it is...
That was also back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me so much of then, though. I mean, when you've got these stock numbers that are not even... I mean, some of these deals, what they've done, Kenny, is they've actually forced me to go look at the financials of some of the firms.
Right. And the deals are once again getting out of control the way it felt, you know, in the late 90s, right, when it was just completely out of control.
Well, I mean, I was looking at, and again, this is not any kind of a investment advice, but the ones I've looked at recently are both Zoom and then this Squared. And I'm going, wow, these guys are paying like $30 billion. Do they even have $30 billion? I go through the number and like the book value is $4 billion. You know,
it's not right. They're using the gains in their stock to scoop all these up. And you know, when the game is hot, the game is hot, and everyone loves the idea, right? I'm getting Zoom stock, or I'm getting Square stock, or I'm getting, you know, XYZ stock, whatever it is, right?
Well, when I caution people about Bitcoin and I say, careful, it's really not worth anything, there's nothing behind it, and somebody says, well, neither are so many stocks and neither is the U.S. dollar, I almost can't argue.
No. I hear you. That might not be so true when you talk about some U.S. companies. Certainly there's big companies behind them and all that, but I agree. The elevated valuations and then how they use it does cause somebody to stop and ask, right?
Right. Well, and it also reminds me a little of 99. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Kenny. When I traded in 99, I was in the OEX pit, right? So, I mean, it was the top 100 stocks. And those stocks were high, you know, certainly in retrospect. They were high because, you know, the Fed was pouring all that money in for Y2K and stuff. But they never got to the ridiculous stage of the dot-bomb stuff. I mean, your regular companies like your 3Ms, your IBM, they never got to 100 times earnings or anything like that. So even though they went down a little, well, they went down, you know, somewhat significantly, but they never lost, you know, 80% of their value or anything like that.
No, not at all. But remember what that was like in 98, 99 with those .com stocks, right? Because the internet was just new, and you had what was his name from Merrill Lynch there, the guy that ultimately got whacked. You know, the analyst that was pumping up the stocks, and the one, but then on the other end was saying they're all pieces of shit.
Was it Kathy Wood's dad?
Which one?
Was it Kathy Wood's dad?
No. No, it was. No, you know.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I do.
The redheaded guy, head of, I forget what his name is. It escapes me at the moment. But, you know, those dot-com stocks were just absolutely crazy. You know, they would come. They when they'd come public, Morgan Stanley or Goldman Sachs would say, you know, worth $15 a share. The thing would open at 150, trade up to 300, back to 200, and close at 500. You'd sit there, scratch, and go, what the hell is going on?
Well, it was like tulips,
It was. It was nuts like that, right? And so when those stocks crashed, they crashed because there really wasn't anything to them.
But some of the stocks that came, your Oracles and your Ciscos, all got caught up in that same, they ended up being valued like those things, even though Oracle and Cisco were, I use the term, real companies with a product. They just got priced like a dot-com place.
Because it was the mania, right? Remember, it was the mania at the time, which feels a little bit like the way it is now, right? This mania at the time. As a matter of fact, I just was reading an article, somebody posted it on LinkedIn. There's an article in Vanity Fair this week, I guess, or this month, whatever, but it's about the Hamptons, right? And so it says, what rich people in the Hamptons hate are even richer people in the Hamptons, because now, you know, now that even richer people are moving out there, and it's even more obnoxious than it already was. but yeah, it's completely, you know, it feels very toppy to me. Like, this feels like this is the top. And I think the Robinhood IPO last week was kind of another signal of it being the top, you know?
Well, did you listen to the, old gray-haired guy on there that should have known better and said something like, well, maybe the fact that they're now public, they'll actually, like, behave like a real firm or something. I'm going,
right.
Say what?
No,
what are you talking about?
Maybe that's true.
You know, it's like, but it's, I don't know. I mean, they still can't get around this payment for order flow thing. And I don't know. And how Americans don't realize that if you don't pay, you're not the customer. I don't get it, Kenny.
Well, but you know something? It's funny because I think people do realize if you don't pay enough customer, but honestly, the reaction I was getting from people on Twitter over that exact issue was, I don't really care because I can trade for free, and I'd rather be able to trade for free, and if I lose a couple of pennies here and there, overall, it's better than me paying $5 a trade or $7 a trade or whatever it was. And so in the end, they don't really care because they go on their Fidelity account or their Robinhood account or their TD Ameritrade account or whatever, and they can buy and sell stocks, and they're right, and they buy them for free, but they don't care because all they want to know is, it didn't cost me anything physically. I don't know what it cost me in terms of pennies or sub-pennies, but as far as I'm concerned, I didn't pay for it, so I'm okay with it. And that's where I think it goes off the rails, right?
Well, I think the assumption is that it's pennies.
Mm-hmm.
and it's not. I mean, even in the Bernie Madoff era, who, well, first of all, I think if for the next week, every time they mention payment for order flow, they say Bernie Madoff invented it, people have a different view of it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, but in those days, Kenny, I mean, he would pay what? A penny a share rebate, correct?
Yeah.
But if you did the math, I think at the time, 33% of the trades done on the New York Stock Exchange, now NASDAQ adds another part to it, and I don't know how to calculate that one. But wasn't it 33? You know this better than me. 33% of the time,
yeah,
you did better than the bid ask on the New York, and I'm going to say an eighth, but it could even have been a quarter in some stocks, but say an eighth. So let's see. A third of 12 cents, which is what was before an eighth, right? A third of 12 cents is 4 cents, and you're getting paid 1 cent. So if you did the math, you were four times better off paying some commission. Now, how much? Obviously, it was too much. It was, you know, it was 50 right. bucks for a share. It probably wasn't, but the point is if you did the math, you were way better off paying a commission than you were, you know, just paying the offer, selling the bid, and having Bernie get his penny.
Right. But I think the world has changed. I think the internet and the automation has given everybody this sense that, you know, they're in control. And I guess they are in control of their own, you know, they can control their own trading accounts. And they like the idea that to them it's free. Like, they think it's free. And you know, you and I both know when it's free, it's not really free, right? You become the product. And that product is very valuable, and it's quite obvious in this payment for order flow conversation. Well, it's very valuable.
But it's only, I think it wouldn't be as valuable, Kenny, if I could, without fighting the whole battle, if I could make one change, which I think would derail the whole system. There's no reason why the firms can trade within the penny.
Right, they traded sub-pennies, right?
Yeah, so
price points between every penny is 1,000 price points.
Yeah, so if they weren't able to do that, if you were offered an IBM at 148 even, you had to be traded with before anybody else could be, like it was on the options floor, and you
right.
couldn't trade it at 70 with 29,999. I think you'd blow most of the payment for order flow out of the water without even having to have a big deal about it.
Yeah, but that's what they do, right? They're trading at the sub pennies in the alternative venues, right? Because on the exchanges they trade only in pennies, right? So there's only 99 price points, but in the alternative venues, they can trade out 4 decimal points, so it's 1,000 price points, and that's what they're doing all day long.
Well, that's like saying
when they're doing it in huge volumes like that. It clearly, look at Citadel, right, making money hand over fist, because that's all they do. They accommodate within the penny. They traded sub pennies all day long.
But how did that become legal? We'll talk about that next week. Is it shouldn't be. I mean, why should anybody be able to trade narrow than anybody
else? Their argument is, listen, when they went down to the SEC, their argument is, listen, we're providing liquidity. We're helping the end user, which is the retail customer, which is everyone you protect. And look at what we're doing for them. And, you know, they're getting better prices because we're jumping in the middle. Well, that's interesting, because if I'm getting a better price, how are you making so much money?
Those guys, I hope they pay them a lot per hour, because to be able to make that argument without laughing out loud is really a skill set.
It's unbelievable. it's a big lobbying effort. Trust me, Citadel pays a lot of money. Fidelity pays a lot of money down in D.C., right?
Kenny, you should be in Chicago this week. The best weather we've ever had the last 2-3 days.
We're in Chicago.
Yeah. 75, sunny, no humidity. It's great.
Yeah. I landed in Nashville last night. I'm at the Grand Ole Opry at a conference this weekend. I've never been here before. It's really amazing as I'm looking out my bedroom window.
I bet
right
you're going to have a great time there. You may not have moved in there. You'll love it. Take care of yourself, buddy. Talk to you next week.
All right, I'll talk to you next week.
Bye. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 27. Be right back, Mr. Mike Hart.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 1550. NASDAQ futures up 2650. And Dow futures up 161. Individual stocks, nothing really crazed here in the Dow. Just everything is sort of up. Nike up 95 cents. Disney up 89 cents. V's up 175. So, I mean, everything's the only one I have down. I have a Salesforce down 60 cents and I have Microsoft down 2 cents. Everything else is green. So, nothing horrible there. Mike, how are you, buddy?
Hey, doing fantastic, Chief. How's it going this morning?
It's it's going good. The weather's gorgeous, as you well know.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We did have to duck off to Kennedy at not our usual spot because evidently they got a bunch of lane change things going on downtown, and everybody's so confused, Mike. That I guess the Ryan Inn and the Kennedy Inn people are confused. I hate it when that happens, when people are confused, right? But you should go.
Well, I'm lucky because I don't actually have to drive into work yet. I will have to at some point once we make the conversion back to working from home, working from actual work location. But for the past year, I haven't had to drive or commute, so I've been able to avoid some of that mess.
Yeah, I was catching bits and pieces of it on. I listen to News Radio 78 to get the markets. Obviously, I'm in the car. And now in the morning, I just listened to Stocks and Jacks. But so they had somebody had done the deep dive, Maddie, and I don't know how you do this, but real reasons why people want to stay at home rather than come back to work. Obviously, the ones are if you're doing almost the same or the same amount of work, and you're an hour and a half train ride away, or you moved 80 miles away because you thought you would never have to go back to work, and now they want you to come back, and now you're kind of screwed. But they're talking about how many people have developed a side hustle, and are auctioning stuff up on Etsy or something at home, and are doing that 2 hours a day and manage to squeeze it in their normal day, or how many people, they have got maybe two or three dogs now and don't want to pay a dog walk. I mean, a lot of the stuff that has come in is kind of the stuff I was suspecting all along, and it's not just I'm so productive here. I don't want to come back to work and like rob you guys in production. give me a break. Interesting. I do know some people like. Didn't Kenny tell us, Manny, that somebody in New York where they said maybe they'll never have to go back and actually moved to Florida, another place wants them to come back. Some story.
Yeah,
the guy's like in Florida. Well, there's a commute. unless he doesn't have Scotty beaming him back and forth, I think he's kind of out on that commute. But
Mike, it's gone a little early there.
Yeah, I think I was talking to Jeff yesterday about you, and we want to talk about some vol today. I mean, we're still even today being down 70 cents. We're still with nothing but rallies really for many days in a row now. We're still pushing that 19 number. You're always saying is, but I guess what I want to ask is, I've been because of these. I'll use the term deals because they are deals where people are taking, in my opinion, very inflated stock in return for their company. Every time I look to see where these companies, what I would say they're actually worth or their book value or whatever. Now, book value isn't that the same. It's an indication. It's not something you want to, Amazon.
Sure.
I mean, it's an indication. PE ratio, revenue per share, they're all indications. All right. If you looked at any of those indications with Amazon 5 years ago, you never would have bought the place, and now all of a sudden it's, 10 times that. However, if you did it to 10 stocks at the same time that you did it to Amazon, the other nine are probably gone, type of thing. So it depends on, we've reached where I think we've reached a point where almost 1999, where there's really two total different sets of valuation here. There's the, you know, there's the Microsofts of the world and these other companies that have been real companies for a while. Not these other places aren't real companies. That's not what I'm alleging. But we're still saying, oh, they're normally 12, 14, maybe 15 times earnings, and they're 20. You know, these are your Caterpillars, your 3Ms, places like that. Now, they're not all exactly 20, but you look at that and you say they're inflated because of the interest rates. I mean, of an income stream is worth more now than it ever was because the way you value that, which would be the interest rate, appears to be hanging in here longer than anybody thought. So even I'll use the term traditional companies have somewhat of a historically inflated PE. Doesn't mean they're not worth that. And, but now there's another whole set. I mean, draw a line, and on this side of the line, you've got your Snow, you got your Zoom, you got who's the guy's taking the place over yesterday? Jack
Square.
And you've got Shop, you more than me, we could probably list 25 companies that have been around a while. They're not fly by nights. And now they're trading, you know, their PE is 200. And it appears to be that way. If their income goes from 5 cents a share to 10 cents a share, the stock like triples. You know, it's like, we're not even given it a chance to grow in. And I'm not saying these things won't grow into their quote $200 price, but they're not going to grow into it if 6 months from now it's $400. I mean, the stocks are moving faster than the ability to grow in maybe
that's true. And you know, I think it's hard to make the argument that all of these stocks are going to grow into those types of stocks.
Right.
You know, a handful have, like you said, Amazon, some of your Microsofts, some of the big ones that have stuck around and been around for a while. They've proven themselves and they've proven their worth. But you get these smaller billion-dollar companies, and you do the same exact math behind it, and sometimes it just doesn't feel the same on paper when you look at it and you say, wow, this is a really inflated price, and this means a lot has to be accomplished in order for this price to actually be realized in the market.
Right, and you wonder how many. I was mentioning this to Jeff yesterday. I'll be real brief today. People are saying the same thing twice, but I actually did a calculation in 99. I took like, I don't know, I forget so long ago, 10, 15, 20 of the biggest stocks, and I figured out how much their revenue had to be to get any sort of a normal level on revenue, not profit. You know, there were stocks like Cisco that were, their stock was trading 60-something, the revenue was like 4. And I'm like, okay, but Cisco's a big company. And I said, okay, for their revenue to be, let's say, 20, which still would be light for 60 on the shares, they need to go from, you know, 8 billion a year to, you know, pick a number, 30 or something. And I did that for like the top 20 companies, and the amount of increased revenue was like some significant percentage of the GDP, for God's sake. I mean, the point is, I mean, they all can't get there because there just isn't enough money. You know, it's like, okay, you can't all nail the bachelor. I mean, there's 40 women or 40 guys. There's only going to be one winner here because there isn't enough time in the day, you know, type of thing. It's so. I mean, I'm kind of reaching that stage with some of these companies. I'm just wondering, kind of what's going to happen. I mean, we're starting to get.
Well, if you look back to 1999, we didn't realize those prices ultimately because we did have the internet bubble that imploded on itself. And a lot of those companies, not all of them, some of the bigger ones stuck around. They managed to hold on to those high PE levels and prove themselves, but a lot of them just gave that up, and that was the story of the past.
Well, I mean, actually, this is interesting, Mike, is even though I was one of the, quote, naysayers, because I only had, when I was lecturing a lot of the time, so I had to study those companies. I didn't trade them. I was trading the OEX. Even by anybody's stretch, I was one of the naysayers. I never would have predicted Cisco going from 60-something to 6. I mean, I would have said this thing's got 40 written all over it or something, but I never would have said 6. So now, with this history behind me, when these people look at a stock that is, you know, trading 250 or something, I'm not sure that somebody getting on TV and saying, wow, you know, these guys could have a 10%, I look at like the Zooms of the world and the thing's three something and somebody's put a 450 target on. Mike, I think if that stock was 40, I wouldn't look at it twice. I mean,
that's the scary part, actually. That's the scary part is how high these prices have inflated. And you don't have to look back very far on a chart to see the inflation occur. You go back, you do a yearly chart, and you can see a high to low that's usually hundreds of dollars in differences just from that year. So a lot has changed over the past year, even. And that's a very short period of time to be talking about.
Well, and the interesting part is we've run into the, I mean, it used to be, you know, you and I talked on the show, we talk about the FANGs, but they're nowhere near as in the stratosphere as some of these other places. I mean, right now.
Not right now.
But back in 99, those guys, well, not those guys, that's exactly what I'm talking about, is if you were to take the top five stocks in the QQQ at the time, which were 45% of the Qs, only one of them has made it back to its pre-99 price. Can you name it?
I did not know this. This is good trivia. I can't even venture a guess. I'm not sure.
Well, a couple of them might have made it at least, but I think the stocks were Microsoft, which, after years at $35, after it had been like 60 during the, is now obviously blown way through it because it's at 280, right? Probably on its way higher.
Right.
But the other ones were Cisco, which has just made it back to the 60s range. Oracle, which I don't think has done it yet. Dell, which ended up going private. And Intel, which can't get out of its own way for double decades now, right? So, I mean, it's not like, if you look at a, you know, like a 3M or even an Apple or something where you'd say, gee, you know, 3M, you know, it's trading 197, you know, and another time it might be valued where it would be, you know, 175 or something or 165. But still, you would have some kind of a confidence that, okay, even if I got in it here and, you know, it'll be 3-4 years, but at least then it'll be 200. You know, it's not like I'm buying something that's going to go from, you know, which isn't to say it can't, right? But who knows if they're, you know, I mean, I don't think they're cheating on the books or anything. But it's not the same as, you know, some company going from 60 to 6 and taking, you know, two decades to get back to 58. I mean, that's just I'm sure there's somebody somewhere who's going to sell it someday at like 67 to Cisco and say he made money on it. I don't know. Did he really after a 22-year wait? I don't think so. But
it's hard to say. But, you know, like in 1999, you know, at some point, there was a collective recognition that these things were overpriced, and across the board we saw selling, and we saw these high PE ratios peel off these companies. And when you say, you know, history has a tendency to repeat itself, especially in the stock market, you could make that comparison to where we're at now with the level of pricing that we're seeing on just things in general.
Yeah.
Things that are trading are very expensive. And we are looking at still a VIX, like you said in the beginning, a VIX that's very close to 20. Historically, a VIX close to 20 is very high, actually. It's above the mean, above the average. You know, typically we see it around 15. We're at 18.8 right now. We've been over 20 about a week ago. There's still volatility out there, which means there's collectively there's fear.
But it doesn't... Again, you're the VIX maven here, but even in 99, as the volatility kind of crept up a little bit. I mean, because obviously the Fed, which I was trying not to mention, but the Fed was clearly involved then as they are now. I mean, they poured so much money in the end of 99. So the last, I'll lob a number out there, Mike. The last, say you had, you know, Mattie Weber's dot bomb was $20. Then it went to 80, then it went to 180, then it went to like 250. Well, I'm going to say the last $70 was pure Fed with Y2K. You know, just pouring money into the place where everything just kind of exploded.
Sure.
And I'm going to say, but the entire move from 50 to 250 wasn't the Fed. I mean, it was the last, whatever you want to call it, 20% maybe, or 15. And here I think we have sort of the same thing. I mean, the stocks that I mentioned, that group of stocks, not individually those stocks, I'm going to say this year, without a doubt, the last 25%, without a doubt to me anyway, the last 25% at least has been the Fed. But it didn't drive these stocks from the 50 they maybe ought to be to the 250 to they're now 400. I think the Fed's done the last 100 maybe, but it started in 2000 when we didn't all fall apart with Y2K. The Fed immediately started pulling money out. Where now they're saying, oh no, we got so much in, we got to keep it going, which is a totally different program on their part. And it's caused...
Totally different program, and the consequences could be totally different, too. It's hard to say what that means.
But I'm trying to get out here very clumsily and ask you this question. It's going to take you a while to answer. The VIX being 20 or 19 or wherever it is, it's elevated, and it gives you an idea that something might be wrong in the force. It's a little elevated, but it really doesn't tell you that a stock that is trading 300, you and I might look at it and go, God, this thing could be 40. I mean, I don't think the VIX comes close to predicting that, does it?
No, it doesn't. The VIX gives you, on a very market level, where stocks in general are trading. So VIX, looking at the S&P 500, we're taking the 500 biggest stocks in the United States, and we're saying, where does the volatility land for these stocks? And it lands somewhere around 19 right now. You could take that a step further and say, well, what does 19 represent to us? We could say 1 year from now, if we started today, look at the VIX. VIX is at 19. The market's predicting a plus or minus move of 19%. And that's what's being predicted by the VIX as far as what is potential for movement. It doesn't tell us if it's more positive or negative. It just tells us there's a 50-50 chance that we're going to be 19% higher or 19% lower.
What would you notice? I mean, there's other quote VIXs around. There's the VIX on the MX or the Nasdaq. There's the VIX on the Russell, right?
Absolutely.
If you and I think that this, I don't know, I'll use the term second tier tech stocks. I guess, where would you put Zoom? A second tier text? I mean, somewhere. I don't know what you'd even describe it. If there was a VIX on those stocks, would you or should you start to notice that getting the spread between that and the other VIX, the regular VIX, starting to expand?
Exactly. And what you'll actually notice is what we'll say is single stock risk. It begins to really accelerate in these second tier type companies like Zoom. So Zoom right now has an IV rank. If you look at the IV rank, it's going to be 31%. So it's higher than the market. And if you look at the pure implied volatility on the option chain for the shortest duration is about 51%. So the volatility is much higher on these individual stocks, meaning the market's smart enough to know that these companies aren't quite the same caliber as some other companies out there. And when you look at it individually and not collectively, it takes on a lot more risk, and the risk profile becomes much more dangerous.
Well, what in 99, here's kind of a difference in, well, my view, is that in 99, I'm going to say that the traditional stocks were in the SPX, OEX, right? And they had their vol going. And then you had the QQQs, which was the NASDAQ 100. And at the time, the stocks that were accompanying the internet, I mean, not the ones that went from 300 to 3, they weren't quite in there, but your stocks, your Cisco's, your Microsoft, the Intel's, they were all in there. And that, I think the Qs went from, what, 120 to 22 or something? It was the S&P never went down to 20% of where it was. I mean, that's an amazing drop for an index. But there is no, I don't, even if something like that happens now, and I'm sure not hoping or predicting, if something like that happens now, you're not going to see, there is no index that all these basket of, I'll use the term danger stocks, are in. Is there? I mean, it's not like the Q's is going
to. No, there isn't. Not at all. A lot of these are in multiple baskets. So, it's not unlikely that Zoom is in the S&P 500 along with being in the NASDAQ. They don't have to be mutually exclusive, so to speak. They could be in multiple indexes. And nothing really stops something like Zoom from being put into one of these baskets if it meets the criteria, which is often a pretty low criteria of, value account or total size.
Well, it's what's interesting. It's, I guess, a plus and a minus, Mike, but as you know, my job is managing money for people, and our signature thing is, for years, has been the Protect and Index program. When we first started, at least that part was easy. The only index was the spider, right? The only one you could trade, the only ETF that was any good. Actually, was the only one for a while. So whenever you looked at your performance, it was real easy. We can say, okay, here's what we did. Here's what the spider did over 2, 4, 2, 3, 4,
Definitely.
6 years.
Yep.
It was easy to do. And then the Qs came in, and my brother, we had an alternative strategy. You could be in the Qs or the spider. And there was only two, but they didn't always trade the same way. So you had your underlying, and it was very easy to compare how you did. And oh, by the way, we did pretty darn good. Now it's like I have people that are in the Qs. I have people that are in the Russell. I have people in the spider. Well, not only are they moving a lot of times in totally different directions, but you'll get a call from somebody. I mean, not necessarily the people PTI, but a lot of the places that I do business with, that I do the subcontracting, where somebody will say, well, geez, we're not doing very good. And I go, what do you mean? Your index is up 8 and we've got protection. By the way, we're up 7, or something, or 6,
right,
or whatever it happens to be. Oh, yeah, but what about this stock? Well, what about it? Well, it's up 50%. Why aren't we in that? Well, because, A, you're retired, you want diversity, and you wanted protection. We kind of went through all this. Yeah, but I should be in that one. I mean, it makes
There's
it
only so much you can do. You can't do everything, Tom.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying, but it is absolutely, because people don't have any fixed investments, even though Dan Janitis does a pretty good job on that, finding what there's available. There's no risk-free money. Everybody, I mean, it's even worse than 99. The people, and a lot of people that I don't want to have as a client, to be honest with you, they expect you as a money manager to be in whatever was up yesterday. And that's your job. And, you don't really want to say, well, gee,
yep,
if I could do that, the last thing I would need is you as my customer. you don't want to say that to somebody, but that is the truth, right? It is startling how much of the press and how much, oh God, all you got to do is be in the at home stocks. Well, yeah, but don't even heard of the place.
Well, I really think this fear of missing out is a thing that did take over Wall Street, and it really is, it's counterintuitive to all real trading mechanisms out there of the fear of missing out. It really shouldn't be a term that investors throw around.
But it's there.
It is.
But it's the only way for anybody to make any money. So I'm not going to put a fire hose on these people. I'm saying it's the only way to make money. It's not like you can. I mean, the deal, I think, if you retired, and this is the, this is my clientele. I mean, this is 15 years ago. These people were all over the place, Mike. It was they'd retire, husband and wife. They got $1 million in their 401k, they bring it over to PTI and they say, okay, we want it protected, we trust you. This went on, I won't say weekly, but monthly, easily, maybe semi-weekly. I mean, but now the world has changed. You don't see many people piling out with $1 million. But the deal,
right,
was when you put the IRAs together and the 401k, or the 401ks at the places, they turn into IRAs. The deal was, if you and your lovely bride hung in there, and I'm talking, 15, 20 years ago, if you hung in there and you saved in your 401k and your company match and you were at a real place and they gave you the match, you retired with roughly about the same number everywhere, because I had all kinds of these people. Million, million one, million two, 950, something like that. And if you put that, yep. if you put that in the bank, and you had your house paid for, which everybody did, you know, you put that in the bank, and we're talking about not necessarily blue collar jobs, but white medium jobs, white collar medium jobs, not white people, white collar medium jobs, and blue collar jobs. That's about where you landed. Okay, so you pile in there, and the deal was, without even me included, the deal was you made 3% in the bank. You got $2,000 a month in your Social Security, so that's $5,000 a month, just coming to your house. House is paid for. That takes care of the taxes. It takes care of a roof every 10 years, a car every 6 years. You're good to go, without dipping into your stuff.
It's a good deal. It's a good deal right there.
Yeah, I mean that was the deal. Now that how well's that deal happen? I mean now. You don't have the $1 million because you're helping your kid with education or one of their kids with education. You don't have the cash. And oh, by the way, you put it in a bank and you don't get anything. And the taxes right. on the house have tripled, right? So you can't even cover it, even if you were making the stuff in the bank. So now you gotta get rid of the house. Not to mention the price of a new roof is now $30,000 instead of 10. You know, so everything has gone against you. And the only thing you have left yep. is a market that's going up and is constant. Joe down the block was in XYZ and he doubled his money. So you got to be in there. So you call your broker and you say, why wasn't I in XYZ? Well, Mike, you, last thing you want is to be in a startup company, right? We'd discuss this. Well, I don't care if we discuss it. That guy made dough and I didn't. And by the way, I'm not making any money anywhere else in your place because you're giving me nothing on interest. And this is, in a fixed income you put me in is nothing. You know, or if you're smart enough to buy the fixed income and you sold it at a premium, that, you know, you made 30% at it. Well, that's forgotten because now what have you done with me lately? I mean, it really is, everybody thinks it's investment heaven here, but it sort of isn't. I don't think. Well, let's talk about it after the break. SP Futures up 7. Now we've leaked down from 16 to 8. NASDAQ Futures up 18. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 875. The NASDAQ Futures up 21. They were up 16, like, very short time ago. Dow Futures up 75, and they were up over 100 a short time ago. By the way, man, is, what's your name's going on? Is the balance beam tonight?
Is that, well, I mean, it's, if you're talking about live, it probably already happened, but.
Well, then tell us what happened.
Yeah, but I think we'll get to watch it tonight.
And she, I hope she does well. I mean, everybody, she's a lot of people's favorites. Boy, every little girl that's into gymnastics knows all about her, and she is absolutely their hero.
Really?
Oh, Murph was telling me that his granddaughters were, like, collectively in tears. He said, of course, with little girls, it didn't last very long. 4 hours later, they were fine. Dax up 10, 0.1%. It was up more a bit ago. FTSE up 25.4%. Kekaran is kind of leading the pack. You're up 64. That's a full percent. We're in Asia, down but not huge. They were up huge yesterday. Nikkei down 139. It's 0.5%. Nikkei's been very volatile. You know, their interest rates can't move at all. Their stock's up and all, up and down every day. Shanghai down 16.5%. Hang Seng down 41.2%. Review of yesterday, Dow down 97, S&P down 8, NASDAQ up 8. So not that much different than we are today, the opposite direction. Bonds, 1.17, unchanged, for the 10-year U.S. The Bund, minus 0.48. Japan, positive point. Maddie, it's getting, can't get much closer than this, 0.002 positive. U.K., 10-year, 0.52. Oil, it was up earlier, now it's not, it's under 70. 69.95, that's down $1.31. It's a pretty good move in an hour. Brent down 117, 71.72. I'll try and find some inventory report came out, and it must have changed the market a little bit. Natural gas is unchanged, 393. RBOB down 2 cents at 225. We've got gold down 11, 18, 11, still hanging above 1,800 where it rallied last week. Silver down 15 cents, 25.42. Big recommendation on gold from Cramer yesterday, out of all people. However, it's not moving the market this morning. Copper down 6 cents, 4.36. And we've got Bitcoin down 1,169 at 38,189, virtually right in the middle of, it's the higher end of the range. The range has been probably 40 to 30. It's a high end, but it's down this morning. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have some issues on the Eisenhower. We had an earlier crash on the outbound side right at Des Plaines Avenue. Apparently, that's all clear now, but just east of there, there's another crash on the outbound Ike at Harlem that's blocking the entrance ramp, and so that's causing a slowdown too. So the Eisenhower already moving slowly on the inbound side, now moving slowly on the outbound side as well. So significant delays on I-290. No issues on the Southside expressways right now. Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford, normal traffic times, it would appear. Traffic building steadily on the Stevenson. Up north, we have some issues on the Edens. Looks like there's a crash on the outbound side at Dempster that's been moved to the right shoulder. And then right near there, or actually they have the same crash on there twice. So that's the issue on the Edens. Kennedy is looking okay near the Edens, but then as you approach downtown, there's a crash on the inbound side right near North Avenue that's been moved to the right shoulder as well. So some delays on both the Edens and Kennedy due to a couple of crashes. And then lastly, up north of US 41 at Park Avenue West, there is an accident. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, mild temperatures. Just another beautiful summer day, partly cloudy with a high of 78 today. Right now it's crystal clear and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 111. Right now it's clear and 91. In sports, quiet night in baseball last night. Cubs and Sox were both off. They'll both return to action this evening. White Sox are hosting the Royals at 7:10. Cubs are at Colorado to take on the Rockies at 7:40. Diamondbacks played last night. They lost in extra innings to the Giants 11-8. NBA basketball, Bulls made a splash, adding Lonzo Ball for 4 years and $85 million in a sign-and-trade. They sent Satoransky, Temple, and a second-round pick to New Orleans. Bulls also signed Alex Caruso, who was with the Lakers, to a 4-year, $37 million deal. Lastly, we'll take a quick look at our Olympic medal count. It's China and the U.S. tied atop the field with 68 total medals between the two of them, but China has 10 more golds than the U.S. to hold the top spot. ROC, the Russian Olympic Committee, is in third place with 51 total medals. Chief.
Wouldn't you, Mike, bear with me for a minute, but when you see some of these people, and I didn't get a chance, I was going from station to station last night, but I'm not doing very good on my station surfing on the Olympics because I'm missing some of the stuff I want to watch. But aren't you sort of stunned? I mean, I'm not 25 anymore. I would never have dreamed that somebody, the lady who's very attractive on top of it, not that I noticed, she's the 400-meter Mandy champion, but this is her, like, fourth Olympics, and she's a sprinter? And does she even have, like, a couple of... I would never have dreamed that you would have seen, you know, when I was a kid, that somebody would be a sprinter, a high-end sprinter at age 34. I mean, it is stunning how the age pieces. I mean, there's people playing in these gold medal volleyball games that are 36. I mean, now it doesn't even seem old, but when I was like 15 or 18, the thought of somebody competing at that level, I mean, it's one thing to be, you know, a 36-year-old basketball player that's got all the wily knowledge about him. It's quite another to be winning the slam dunk competition when you're 36. And,
right.
And yet these people are doing unbelievably well. I mean, I'm not accusing them of drugs, but I think it's fantastic. As you get up in years a little bit, when you see stuff like this, I mean, it is incredible how these people are on the world stage at those ages. I mean, I know part of it's they're making money, you know, so they don't have to go get a regular job like you used to, you know, if you were in the 1960s Olympics, and you left and you went and got a job. And part of it's the sponsor money, but still, that's to be able to compete in a sprint when you're 30 something against people that are 19. How do you do that?
Are you asking me? I have no idea. I've never been a good sprinter, but there's no doubt. I mean, Tom Brady turned 44 yesterday. And he just won a Super Bowl. He's 44. Quarterbacks used to be over the hill at 34.
Well, they didn't spend
their taking hits.
Well, they didn't spend their off season getting stem cell treatment in those
days.
Well,
that's true. Yeah, the healthcare is better. They take care of their bodies better. Their training is year round. I mean, everything is advanced in that regard. And then he's had some luck. He's only had one really bad injury, and that was in 2011 when he tore his ACL. Other than that, he's been very healthy his whole career, which helps. But yeah, there's no doubt. Michael Jordan was over the hill at LeBron James's age, and LeBron James is still playing at a very high level. I mean, for whatever reason, people are able to play well longer. I don't know anything about the sprinters and the track. I couldn't name a single sprinter except for Usain Bolt.
But that's such a quick twitch.
Yeah, you would think you would lose that in your, you know, late 20s, think.
But, I mean, you don't see...
But Usain Bolt ran it.
Yeah.
He was in, what, three Olympics or two?
Yeah.
At least two.
But, I mean, you're not going to see...
Is he in this one?
No.
Okay.
I was surprised, but I wonder if he would have been last year. I don't think so. I think he retired after the last one. But I mean, you're not going to see LeBron. He's playing at a super high level, but you're not going to see him in a slam dunk.
Well,
He was, you know...
I mean, I agree with you, but, I mean, he's capable of still... competing pretty highly in the slam dunk contest, which is crazy, but he is. He wouldn't do it just because he doesn't want to do it. He's never done it, actually. He's never been in slam dunk. But I actually would be interested to see him do it at this age. You know, he's 37 or whatever he is now, because I think he could actually compete with the 23-year-olds.
I bet he'd have to really practice.
He would, yeah. And he wouldn't have it as easy as he did, you know, 15 years ago,
right.
No doubt.
But anyway, I'm congratulatory to all these people. I really... What's her name? Just she's still playing soccer. The one who was the captain like how many years ago? What's the one lady? You know what I'm talking about.
With the short blonde hair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know her face. I don't follow any of these sports at all. So it's like you only have so much bandwidth.
That's true.
And so I know a lot about baseball, basketball, and football, and I just don't know anything about these other sports at all. And I just don't care. So I don't watch the Olympics at all, but then every 4 years you would like to have some sort of knowledge about it, but I feel like an idiot because I don't know any of their names. I don't know anything about them.
Well, the thing that I don't think it makes me less popular anyway, but when you go into even down in the local saloon and everybody's transfixed on this, of course, one guy's He's German. He's been to Germany a million times, speaks the language. So they're constantly watching this soccer. And I'm like, hey, I get it. It's the rest of the world's softball. One ball and 20 people get to play. I understand it's a spectacular game. It's like 16 in softball on the south side. You need one bat, one ball,
yeah,
and 20 people
exactly.
play.
Yeah, exactly. Just an open space.
In an open space. And so I get it. But the idea that I'm all of a sudden supposed to care whether Germany beats, you know, God knows who, Liechtenstein, I really don't. And to me on TV, maybe it's better when you watch it in person, but it looks the same.
My thing with soccer is I've never played it, so that's one disadvantage. Because if obviously we've all played basketball and baseball and stuff like that, and so you have that intimate knowledge of the game. I've never played soccer, however, I do like it. If I'm with a group of people that cares about a game and it's a big game, like a Champions League game or a World Cup game or something like that, it can be very exciting to watch when you're watching with people that care. But if it's just on in the background, you just can't pick up on it if you don't know the game that well.
Well, that's true. And I'm sure if those guys were forced to watch a baseball game, they'd be like, what are we watching here?
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of people that come in from Europe all the time. And so that work with us, you know, Poland and the UK and so on and so forth. And, you know, you come to Chicago in the summer, what are you going to do? Well, you take them to a Cubs game because we have great seats. And about halfway through the second inning, inevitably they'll look over at you and be like, I have no idea what's happening right now. Like this, it's like watching paint, it's like watching paint dry to them. They don't get it. Like they're enjoying the beer, they're enjoying the hot dog and the people watching. They couldn't care less about what's happening on the field because they don't understand it at all.
Well, it's like one of the guys used to trade for me. His dad was I don't know if he was a national player in Latvia or someplace, but this guy's Bob. Bob was he was a great softball player, basketball player, nice kid. But his dad said his dad would sit there every single play, like some guy'd have the ball and somebody'd run up and like, I guess it's called a tackle if you take the ball away from him, even though you don't tackle the guy. Every play like that, he would just be, you know, he'd be like he just took a Viagra pill. Oh, God, it's a great tackle. Look at that guy, man. It's like watching Dr. J and his three brothers watch high school football. Oh, man, you see that left guard's great play. Jan, what are you talking about? This is like Sidewash High School versus Slippery Rock. Who cares? What do you mean? It's good football. Look at this. Left guard's really good. I mean, I wouldn't know the left guard from Adam, you know, but I mean, guys, you know, baseball, I'll sit there and watch. Although I'll say right now, it's like watching Little League with the strikeouts and walks, which I never was all that big in. I don't know how when I was pitching in Little League, I would never want him in a right fielder. I either struck the guy out or he walked. What fun is that to play right field? I guess you got the bat a couple times, but that was about it. Anyway, Mike, I have a question for you. This is a big one. This is from a guy who's been doing this now for a long time. I have a lot of clients, and I think most of them like me, and most of them think I did a pretty good job for them or still doing it. Right now, today, if somebody walked in, which I hope they do, because sometimes they still do, and say, oh, you know, here's our money. It's a couple million bucks, million and a half. I don't know what to say what they should expect. I mean, once we go through all the stuff about, well, is anybody still working? Is there still income coming? And you paint the picture of the client as to essentially where they are in the risk reward curve. I mean, and that's my job. You're like a doctor.
Well, I think that's where you got to sort them out.
Oh, sure.
You got to sort them out with the types of risks that are out there right now. They're more unique than they've ever been.
Yes.
I think.
So, but at the end of the day, if we decide, okay, we're going to be in the we'll do, you know, we'll put 50-80% of it in a protected program. Maybe we'll do a little bit in some of these metals, or we'll try and do some kind of inflation hedge, even though so far they haven't been that much of an inflation hedge. I think they will at some point. We do something that makes some kind of sense. We'll do some Russell, we'll do some Spider, we'll do this stuff, and it makes kind of, and people say, well, what can I expect? What kind of return can I expect? And I'm like, God bless. I wish you wouldn't ask that. I have no idea what this next year or two are going to look like. I've never read anything about it, anything like this. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, what I can say is we're going to keep the puts nut and real tight. So if the market goes flying down, you know, you're going to, the most you can lose is going to be, you know, whatever, 2-3%, whatever puts I buy. So if the rest of the world's licking their wounds for 20%, you're going to be licking your wounds for 2. You know, by the way, we'll be a buyer down there. So,
And the nice thing about a protective put program, especially in the current market, and this is relatively new for the newer markets that we're looking at right now, is we have very fast turnaround rates. So the market sells off violently and quick.
Yep.
We saw that in the beginning of 2020. And it turned around within the course of 30 days. We were back up near the highs again from one of the largest sell-offs that we've ever seen. And these are the type of environments we're in, so it does really cater itself to some type of protective, and you use protective puts, but some type of protection in your portfolio to assist you should you see those fast movements.
But the problem with that is, and obviously, I mean, it's a great strategy, or else I wouldn't do it, but everything is the way that the volatility, and this is what I want to ask you, continues to be higher going out than it is narrower. It's right. Harder and harder to cover the protection by selling calls that aren't so close that you give up your upside. And therein lies the rub. I mean, we used to, when the markets were flat in the 90s and in early 2000s, we were doing this. We loved the flat market. We sold calls every month. It was like come to Papa with the money. Well, now it's,
right.
You don't want to be that tight with the calls. So if you give yourself some room, you're selling stuff for like 80 cents on a $200 item, which, you know, it's like kissing your sister if you had one. That's not so good. But then if you don't sell them, all you're doing is paying money for puts. So it's the last thing you want to do is buy the Russell today at 220 and sell like the 222s next week. And all of a sudden, the thing's at 235 and you're chasing for the next 5 years.
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
as hard as the dilemma is, I would say you still need to do those calls in order to afford those puts, because over time, that strategy is going to work out much, much better, much more favorably, if you're at least reducing the cost of those puts. We're in high and flight volatility, so if we're just paying for puts, we're looking at an expensive bill at the end of the month.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Every month.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I mean, one of the indexes, they're all, the weird part, Mike, is they're all sort of different. I mean, one of the ones we have used from time to time is this XLF, which is a banking one. And it's made somewhat progress to the upside. It looks like it might have been a winner. But you get the puts, and all of a sudden these calls are, for 2 weeks you're getting 20 cents. And I'm sitting there going, the last thing I want to do is sell anything for 20 cents that I'm buying back for $2. I mean, that's like shooting yourself in the head. But by the same token, 20 cents every 2 weeks is 40 cents a month, which is 1%. The thing's only trading 37. And if you did that the whole year, that's 12%. And yet, you're sitting there going, I still don't want to sell something at 20 cents. I mean, it's like...
I know.
I mean, even though if you do the math, you know, it's something you ought to be doing. I can't sell the whole year out. I can only do this week, and it looks like a horse bleep trade at 20 cents. I mean, I guess if you add, you know, 50 horse bleep trades in a row, it comes out to be a good trade, but it still doesn't make you want to do it today. I mean, this is difficult from every level here, unless you somehow think you can trade yesterday. But when are you? Do you look at the differences between the VIX on the S&P 500 versus the VIX on the Russell versus the other? Do they tell you anything?
They don't really tell you all that much. It just tells you where the risk is being placed. So we know right now there's more risk being placed on the NASDAQ, and there's even more risk being placed on the Russell, and the least amount of risk is being placed on the S&P 500. It doesn't tell us the story. It just tells us where the market is looking for movement right now. And it seems like the Russell is where the most movement's being looked at, or at least anticipating the most movement. And next you have the QQQ, and then S&P 500.
Well, why do you think, you'll be sorry you ever became a VIX maven. Why do you think that if I go through the list of the big ones, I mean, instead of Russell, the S&P, the Qs, and those kinds of things, I've mentioned them a bunch of times, and you've noticed it as well, that if you go out, say you buy the put out 6 months, and sell the call 2 weeks from now. We're paying a little more for the put kind of everywhere than we're selling the call in terms of implied volatility. Why do you suppose now for a period of several years, the biggest spread there is in the SPY? It's like a 4-point vol difference. You got to pay 20 for that put, and you're selling the call at 16, which to me is a horse bleep deal. That's why I've been doing a lot in the Russell, and somewhat the Russell's way better, and the Q's is kind of in the middle. Why do you think? Why do you think that the Spider is like that? I mean, I have no.
I think it's the price of protection, and the price of protection has gotten so high. Especially in a market that keeps rallying. A market that's been rallying for 10 years is a market that everyone wants to protect themselves to the downside. So we're seeing these really off spread, and they're not very attractive for trading because I think the levels that we've actually made it to and the fact that we haven't seen a sell-off that's been sustained for any period of time in over a decade.
Well, and it's a lot of the short-term trading I like to do, and still do a lot of for my clients, for a small piece of their portfolio for people who want to be a little more aggressive. I mean, as a retail client, I mean, you know this. If you buy an option in, like, October and sell one next week against it, you're considered covered, all right? So your margin is just the price of the spread, whatever you paid for it. Well, unless that's assuming you're doing the same strike. If you buy an 80 and sell a 60, well, then you got to make up the difference between the 60 and the 80. But we'll keep it simple. But if the further one out is much higher than the near term one, as a retail client, if you buy the near term and sell the out, you're considered uncovered. So you're never going to do that for anybody. So as long as you sort of hang in there with the out months being more than the near term, it kind of cuts a lot of what I'd like to do. Out. I mean, you can't really do diagonals. You can't really do calendar spreads because you're not going to be paying a 20 vol for somebody and the one you're buying and selling a 16. Now, most people that do it themselves or have a broker that doesn't know what he's doing doesn't even know what I'm talking about. But clearly, if your broker doesn't know that, you're with the wrong guy. But I mean, I'm not going to do that.
True.
I'm not going to do that for anybody. I mean, even if I think
I'm right. But at the end of the day, in order for a calendar to work, even something as simple as a calendar or a diagonal, you need to have low implied volatility. That's what really makes those strategies work. They're long Vega strategies, so they profit from a rise in volatility. And when you already have high implied volatility out there, you're going in there with kind of a strike against you. It's already hard.
Well, absolutely. And if you're paying more than you're selling, even if they both were 20, it's a problem. But it's really a problem if you're paying 20 and getting 16. Right?
That's true, yep.
I mean, if they're high and even, at least that's only one strike against you. But if they're high and uneven, then you're already on strike two, right?
exactly.
So what? How long are we going to stick at this? We go down a day and the VIX is over 20, and we go up a day and it's 18. It's been between 18 and 20 now for how long? Seemingly, I mean,
we're pushing 6 months. It feels like, and it's been doing this for a while. How long can we stay here? We could stay here for another year, for all I know. But I feel like there's so many catalysts out there and so many uncertainties and just so many dynamics going on. And you look at the interest rate market and things that are starting to come together. I have a hard time believing that we're just going to stay in this range for extended periods of time. So I think we're going to see something finally get shaken up in the market.
When does... I mean, politics is always part of it, with bills being passed, with money flying around it. So we're always, I mean, let's put it this way, Washington's always been part of the market, seeming like way more so in the last few years. But when does, like, in your opinion, when does the election politics start to play on the market again, meaning the mid-year election? I bet it's probably at least November that people start thinking about it. It was already somebody won a seat somewhere. It was a Republican seat, and the guy who won it was more of a moderate than the guy Trump wanted. So you already...
I would think so.
Yeah. Well, the fight.
I would think you're right, November. And the thing is, we're finding from our research end, too, that there is a lot of repercussions from those political events. So there is a lot to the market and what we see politically.
Well, if moderate Republicans start winning in the primaries... versus Trumpies, is that positive or negative for the market or nothing? You just got to wait and see. I mean, that's what we're going to see.
You got to wait and see. Yeah.
And then I'm going to guess right now that the seeming like everybody doesn't like who's ever in office, I mean, lately. So the midterm probably will swing more Republican. I'm at this early stage, that would be my guess, because it seems like it happens all the time, right? What's that going to do? Is that a positive, negative? Or doesn't it matter at this level?
It's so hard to say. It's so difficult to interpret the news because you might think that's a negative for the new, for the market, but it could be interpreted as a positive, which we've seen time and time again when it comes to these Republican Democrat type situations.
Yeah, it seems like as long as the Fed keeps pouring money in, it doesn't really matter who's there, does it?
That's true.
Anyway, Mike, thank you very much. Have a nice week in this gorgeous weather. SP futures back up 11:50 now. So we were 18, then we were 8, now we're back heading back up. NASDAQ futures up 34 and a quarter. Tell you all about it tomorrow morning.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.